So let's take a step back for a second to remind ourselves what we're up to, where we've been, where we're going. And try to think about this issue of abortion and halacha. So as we've, I'm going to try to add new details as we go in here. So as we've tried to, we were focusing on very minute details the last few weeks, but what we're really trying to figure out is what is the issur of abortion? And that is, there is no issur of abortion. Nowhere in the Torah does it really say anywhere there, you know, one of the averus is do not, one of the 613 is do not abort. It doesn't actually say that anywhere. So if we are arguing then that halachically there is a problem with terminating a fetus's life, and we'll have to qualify what exactly that means, then we're stuck, and we have to sort of ask ourselves the question, you know, what is this issur? What exactly is this prohibition? The reason why I say we have to sort of qualify that term is because the first thing we have to ask before anything else is at what point do we have this question? I mean, there's a couple of different hagdarot of what we could possibly be thinking of, right? So obviously there is the Mishnah we saw in Odot, which is a fetus that was fully formed. The question there was, once the fetus is basically ready to come out, right, then the question is, are you allowed to abort it? Are you allowed to save the fetus's life over the mother's life? At what point does anything change there? So there's clearly a difference between fetus as it's leaving the uterus versus fetus before, while it's still inside the uterus. Even when it's in the uterus, we can potentially differentiate between a viable fetus and a non-viable fetus. Maybe there'll be a difference there. Now, you'll note that at least in that concept is really only a modern concept, right? We couldn't really argue for a viable fetus in the times of Mishnayos because, A, chances are they probably weren't viable if for whatever reason they you had to open up and take them out before.
They didn't have a good ultrasound.
They didn't have a good ultrasound. You had no way of really knowing, you know, how many weeks is this thing. Nowadays, just because I think even a fetus at 20 weeks, I think, can potentially be viable. I think that's right. It could be I'm making it up. Can potentially be viable, obviously with a lot of help, but can potentially be viable. That might not necessarily be the same thing from a halachic perspective, because again, that concept did not exist. We also have to ask ourselves the question, if we go even...
Come out and sit with me. Come to the dark side.
If we can also then take it maybe even a further step back, and that is maybe there's some sort of difference between first trimester, for lack of a better option. It's really 40 days versus before 40 days versus after 40 days. Maybe before 40 days, I have a Gemara that says that it's Maya Be'alma. It's some liquid thing. Whatever exactly that liquid thing is, maybe that's not considered a fetus anymore. It will only be considered a fetus once we get past that liquid thing stage.
What's it called? What is it?
Maya Be'alma.
Maya Be'alma.
Yeah. Some sort
what does
of
that
liquid.
Mean literally?
Maya, water, out there in the world.
The world?
Yeah. Not in the world, just like generally.
That exists? Generally. Yeah.
General water, whatever. Some sort of random liquid that's floating around. Hasn't yet taken form. It's important to note, though, even if we are talking about Maya Be'alma, we're talking about 40-day cutoff, even if you want to entertain that possibility, what does 40 days mean? 40 days is not how we count 40 days, right? When we count how many weeks a woman's pregnant, we count from the last menstrual cycle. That's not how halachically you're counting. You're counting from probably from fertilization or from probably not, maybe from attachment to the uterus. I don't know. The reason why I don't know is very simple, because they didn't know when things got fertilized, when things happened. But what we know for a fact is they weren't counting it from the last menstrual cycle. If anything, they were counting it from the last ovulation period. So maybe it was 2 weeks later, right? So whatever 40 days is medically now, add another 2 weeks to that approximately. And then you'll end up with your 40 days being an accurate time frame.
So we're talking close to 2 months, really.
Yeah, that's exactly the point, right? That's much closer to 2 months. You can actually do real genetic testing at that point, right? 40 days, you probably can't really do much. But if we're giving you up to approximately 2 months, that's enough to potentially have done some. You know, you could potentially already see some more information. Yeah, and already make a determination with more information about whether or not you want to abort this thing. And obviously, before the Maya Be'alma, we have the other problem, and that is. Before this thing actually attaches to the uterine wall, right? Egg gets fertilized in the fallopian tube, it then travels over to the uterus, and only then it implants in the uterine wall. That's in between stage while it's still traveling. Maybe that's not considered an abortion at all, api halacha. Maybe it's nothing. Who knows, right? So that's another question.
You remind me of high school biology, how long that takes roughly?
So it takes approximately five to 7 days to go from fertilization, from sperm meets egg in fallopian tube to attaches to the uterine wall. We're talking about 5 to 7 days, about a week. Okay. So if we're adding a week to our 40 days, by the way.
Oh, that pushes even further.
I don't think you would do that. I'm not seriously entertaining that possibility, but I'm just saying you could potentially have another week, and even another week in our account. So there's something we have to think about when we're considering this question. Now, as we've mentioned, there's a couple of different perspectives here, right? The perspective of this thing is considered murder, which is basically the Rambam's, Rav Moshe's view of the Rambam's position, then what you're talking about is actually is that this thing is considered basically alive for all practical purposes. You're not going to have a chiy of misa for killing this thing. It's not like killing a regular human being, but it is considered murder, and this thing is going to be, and you're not allowed to. I'm specifically not being specific. Just 1 second, I'll be more specific. Whatever, right? So this being would be murder. Now we'd have to question. Now, according to Amisha's position, great. So let's say fetus in month 8, month 7, whatever. That thing is going to be considered murder, right? It's going to be considered abortion. How about prior to that? How about use one of our other time frames? Let's say, let's take a step back. Let's go for our Maya Ba'alma stage, which we said is approximately 2 months medically. Of medical terminology, it's about 2 months. 2 months into pregnancy, right? And maybe even a little bit more. You might even be close to the end of your first trimester. According to Amosha, is that still going to be considered an abortion, or maybe that's something else? Maybe that's a different answer, right? Because then at that point, you haven't yet developed whatever it needs in order to be considered murder. Like for Amosha's position, he would, if you want to go to the extreme version of this, right? Just, for example, wasting sperm and not utilizing it in some sort of way that would could potentially be used for either the chiyuv ona or for pregnancy, that's not going to be considered murder according to a mush. That's going to be a different issue, right? There's another issue there, another prohibition of wasting seed, of hashchatat zera, right? That's a different issue. So maybe, of course...
Was it Rambam who said until it takes its first breath? Was it Rambam, or was that in the Mishnah?
What do you mean by first breath? Well, you mean the...
surrounded by air...
Nichnas l'avir olam is the Mishnah's lashon, but that has to do with at what point will I not kill the mother. Yeah, that's much easier. That's when I have a zero-sum game, right? I mean, either I have to... Yeah, if I do nothing, everyone's going to die, or I'm going to kill the mother, or the fetus is going to die, the mother's going to die. So I have to, like, pick who I want to murder here. That's fundamentally different issue.
Yep, got it.
But then, but in Ramosha's position, right? So now, if I'm before Maya, if I'm still in the let's call it Maya Ba'alma stage, or I'm still in the pre-fertilization stage, right? The sperm is still traveling up to go up the fallopian tubes to try to fertilize an egg. Then it's a fundamentally. Then this is not a murder question anymore. It's not an abortion question anymore. Now it might be a question of hashchatat zera, of wasting sperm, and it's a fundamentally different question. According to Amosha's position, if the issue is only one of Hashchatat Zera, then I would argue that there is no prohibition here of Hashchatat Zera for the very simple reason, as we've discussed, that as long as it was placed into the proper area, in other words, it went, the sperm had at one point gone into the vaginal canal and up to the uterus, then it's not considered Hashchatat Zera anymore. That's normal. That's normal physiological destination. And yeah, of the millions of sperm that travel there, most of them aren't going to make it. So who cares that this one fertilized an egg? It also won't make it. My nafkamina, what difference would it make? And maybe, according to Moshe's position, there shouldn't be an issur of abortion, or his version of the issur of abortion, that is, issur of ritzicha of abortion, before these 40 days. That's if you're going to take that worldview. If you take the other worldview, the potentially other extreme, you end up with both a chumrah and a kula. The other extreme is that the whole iser of Ashkatat Zera, of abortion, is that of Ashkatat Zera, right? Why are you not allowed to abort? Because you're not allowed to waste seed. And if when you abort, that means this sperm cell went to waste. It went, it fertilized an egg. It could have potentially done something productive in its life. And instead, you killed it. Right? So you did an Isra of Ashkatat Zera. So first of all, once it's Ashkatat Zera, not a question of Ritzicha, then my barrier to get over in order to be able to justify allowing an abortion is much lower. If the question is a question of Ritzicha, then I can almost never abort, right? Ramosha, we saw last week, even if we know for a fact that this will be a Tay-Sachs baby, and we know it's going to die within 3 years, it's still, we are not allowed to abort this thing. We still have to let it be born and suffer. And everything that goes along with that. But if my question is only that of, well, it's a Zera issue and I'm potentially going to be killing the Zera, so then it's a lower barrier, right? So then for anything I can get rid of this, right? It's not such a big deal. It's not that bad of an Isser, so to speak, right? It's if, I have the mother's going to not really in the mood of having a kid right now because she's in the middle of dental school, then maybe there's no problem of abortion here either because maybe that's not considered, wasting. Again, I'm not actually going to make that argument seriously, but you have a lot more leeway if that is what you're concerned about.
Stakes are lower.
Stakes are much lower. However, that means you have an Isser from the beginning. According to Moshe, I pointed out that you wouldn't have an Isser before this Maya Ba'alma stage, or maybe even a little bit earlier than that. At some point, there's not going to be an Isser. Morning after pill, for example, according to Moshe, should not be an Isser of abortion. Nothing got, the sperm had just fertilized the egg. The egg hasn't implanted itself anywhere. That's not an Isser of abortion. Who cares? It's not even an Isser of a Tzadzera because everything went where it was supposed to go. There's nothing wrong with taking a morning after pill. According to this position, if the whole Isser is that of Ashkatat Zera, then what do I? Then it should be the same Isser of using a morning after pill should be the same thing of aborting a fetus 6 months in. What's the difference? It's the same Isser all around, the Isser of Ashkatat Zera, and I will have, and it would still be Usser, morning after pill would still be Usser. Again, lower barrier, lower standards, but still Usser. The other way of thinking about it, the sort of middle of the road sort of way, is that maybe this is a question of Chabala, a question of wounding. If it's a question of wounding, so then it becomes, it's a similar to, I'm not allowed to just go and cut off my arm, right? There's an Isser going and cutting off your arm. You're not allowed to wound yourself. So if you're not allowed to wound yourself, I'm also not allowed to wound myself internally, wounding myself, cutting out, so to speak, an organ that's growing in my body. This organ happens to be unique. Eventually, it will develop into its own life form. But currently, it's just an organ in my body, and it's an issue of wounding, of chabala. And you're not allowed to wound yourself. I will point out, before continuing with chabala, if the Isser is an Isser of Ashkatat Zera in the previous position, I forgot to mention, then it can also be a significant difference if it's a woman OBGYN versus a man OBGYN, because a male has an Isser of Ashkatat Zera. A woman does not have an Isser of Ashkatat Zera. So a woman might be allowed, there might potentially be a difference between a woman, a female, or a male physician, that the female physician might not have any Isser at all in inducing an abortion.
But
even though it's the woman that's inside the woman.
Right, but you brought up the case of the morning after pill. But in that case, you said there might be an Isser attached to it. The Isser has to attach to a man giving her?
Oh, yeah, you're right. It's a good point. Yeah, you're right. So according to that position, I might actually be able to get away with that also. You're right.
Right.
Yeah, 100%.
Wait, so this issur of abortion is falling on the person who's performing the abortion, not on the...
So it would be on in theory, it should be on both, right? One person is being misayah, so to speak, right? What the person who's getting the procedure done on them is assisting, as in they went into the bed and agreed to go, or whatever stage of abortion we're up to here, either under anesthesia or agreed to take the pill that the physician handed her, more dramatically, it's probably on the physician, right? Who's actually literally, again, depending on what stage we're up to, potentially literally cutting out this thing. Right. Yeah. So that would be an issur on the physician.
How can the issur of hashchatat zera be chal on me? It's not my zera.
Oh, so it might not be relevant whose zera it is.
Oh, really?
You're just wasting sperm in general.
Oh, really?
Namalo.
Okay, that's interesting.
Again, the Hashchadat Zera one is, I don't think anyone really takes that argument too seriously here. The real argument that we're going to be using is one of the other two. Either it's some sort of Ritzicha, obviously the more extreme version, or maybe a Chabala, which is more middle of the ground sort of idea. Right? Chabala would be wounding. Yeah? Here's the problem with Chabala, right? The issue of Chabala is, are you allowed to get your ears pierced? Are you allowed to get your ears pierced? What's a famous story with the ears piercing? Anyone know? Rav Aaron Lichtenstein's story?
It's in the Torah.
That's before Hal Sinai, so it doesn't matter. And it's a nezim, it's a nose ring.
No, I think he's talking about what you do to slaves.
It's in the slaves.
That's like giving malchus, though.
All of our imahot
have. Yeah, but they didn't have the Torah. They weren't even Jewish. Who cares what they did?
No, this is all going on the website.
Arguably, he's right. They weren't even Israelites.
Right. This is
This is some random colony that we graciously saved. I think Native Americans have a similar narrative. Maybe we shouldn't take it on the website. if it's an issue of. So if you're talking about earrings. Yes, thank you for bringing me back. Right? So are you allowed to get your ears pierced? Why should you be allowed to get your ears pierced? It's Chabala, no? You're wounding yourself. I mean, Pasha, it's Chabala, no? So, I mean, I have two versions of the story. So one version of the story, there's a Ryan Lichtenstein version of the story. Ryan Lichtenstein version of the story says his daughter wanted to get her ears pierced. He said, you can't, it's Chabala. They said, okay, they were arguing about it. He said, okay, fine, let's ask for Shlomo Zalman. Ryan Lichtenstein also knows Shlomo Zalman is the man. Goes with her Shlomo Zalman, which Shlomo Zalman says, very simple answer. Boys get a bris milah, girls get the ears pierced. Which does not answer the question, but I think gets the point across that whatever the reason is, this is mutter. Or a Blake's version of it was when I asked him, he told me, listen, I don't know why you're allowed to get your ears pierced, but I know my grandmother's ears were pierced, and I know her husband said it was okay.
Husband or her father?
I don't know when she got her ear pierced. Maybe it was his great-grandfather. I don't know, it's a good question.
So I will say, my father-in-law has an aesthetic distaste for pierced ears.
My mother did too.
So he asked his daughters, listen, I'm not saying you can never do it, but if I'm paying the bills, you can't. And so when my wife got engaged, he said, it's now your problem. I said, I don't, it's your body, not my, it's not my call. So my wife had earrings at the wedding.
So my version of that
That's
story
an interesting
is.
One. I can't say I've heard that that particular aesthetic. I was given a whole bunch of other things like, this is your problem now, but not your ears.
My version of that story is Eliana wanted to get Tova's ears pierced when she was younger, younger baby. And I said, well, we have to wait until after the tetanus shots because I didn't want to get her ears pierced. I didn't tell Liana there's 5 tetanus shots.
So I did it there when I said, when Rina is old enough that she can have an opinion on the subject, we'll ask her and we'll do what she says.
Okay, I should try that one. Okay.
So Rina got herself.
Yourself?
I pierced my kid's ears.
So Rina got her ears pierced at 5.
What time are you doing that for Tova? the potential.
Sarah came home from the hospital with her ears pierced. It was very, very early.
I was making sure to stop. I didn't want that.
Yeah.
It was making me very nervous.
If it wasn't there, it was like shortly thereafter.
Yeah, so I wanted to prevent that.
For a year, Rena wore the fake clip ones.
Yeah.
And then when she turned 5, that's what she wanted for her 5th birthday. I'm like, all right, you're old enough to know what you want.
So there's an issue of Chabal, there's an issue of wounding yourself. The earring excuse, potentially, if you're using at least Rav Moshe, we can talk about plastic surgery at one point, and why is plastic surgery mutter, and what context would be mutter. But what potential version of it is, if it's not at least Rav Moshe's reading of the Rambam, is that if it is not a destructive act, but it is a constructive act, then it is not considered Chabal anymore. So earrings, getting your ears pierced, or getting your nose fixed, is not a destructive act, it's a constructive act, you're fixing something, and so therefore it would be mutter. So then, I mean, abortion still might be a bit of a hard sell to argue that that's a constructive act. Bottom line is you're still killing something. On the other hand, maybe it's constructive because your uterus is now back to its normal, healthy self. There's nothing alien growing inside of it anymore. But You could potentially have this. You really need smiles in the recording, right? You're concerned, but you need to. But you'd have to think about whether or not there's potentially some sort of Isser Chabala. That's the halachic analysis. Practically, when we're actually thinking about this, though, we could think about this. There seems to be three different ways amongst Poskim about how to actually consider abortion. So you have basically your three editions, right? You have your Rav Moshe camp, you have your Waldenberg camp, and you have everybody else in the middle. So when you go with your Rav Moshe Shita, then, as we said, it's basically murder, which means under no circumstances will you ever be allowed to abort the kid if, and the only exception is, if the fetus is it is directly causing harm to the mother. So if the fetus does something, and that is potentially going to cause the mother to die, then you will be allowed to abort the fetus. In no other circumstance will you be allowed to do so, even if...
Not just harm, like going to kill. Not just any harm.
Yeah, and he says even a suffix harm, I'm not sure how big of a suffix, exactly. Right. We saw that tshuva last week. Even a suffix harm would be a problem. And he says that if it's as part of that argument is even if let's say the mother needs chemotherapy, as we mentioned.
Even if it's a comorbidity, that thing may not be
a thing. Right, a comorbidity might not be a thing, right? Might not be enough justification in order to kill the fetus. If its presence is getting in the way of a treatment that the mother can get, that's not the fetus is not causing the harm to the mother. Some other thing is causing the harm to the mother. Maybe it's the cancer is potentially causing this mother's potential issue. So you want to be allowed to abort the fetus in that case. That would be the extreme. The other version of it's slightly differently is that you're allowed to kill a fetus anytime that it could save a life. It's interesting because Moshe specifically goes out of his way to highlight that this case would be usher. And Avraham Lichtenstein, in his address to the Knesset about abortion, specifically goes out of the way to highlight that it'll be mutter. And that is, if you take if this fetus could potentially save someone else's life, let's say you were able to, there's a sibling that needs the bone marrow from this fetus, and I don't think medically this works, but let's just say that if you were to abort this fetus and harvest the bone marrow, you'd be able to save the sibling's life. I need it right now. You can't wait for this thing to be born. So according to Amesha's Shita, you wouldn't be able to abort, right? Because according to Amesha, this is not causing harm to the mother. There's no reason to abort. If you're using the Sravan Lutenstein version of saying the same thing, then you would be allowed to abort because in that situation, you're saving someone else's life. That's enough justification to allow the abortion. That's one version of it. The Tzitzel-Yetzer version of this is basically...
Rav Aaron's position, though moderate relatively, is a logical mess.
What do you mean?
Well, if the source of the Isser is murder, which is allowed through Din Rodef, the Din of Rodef does not attach to anyone other than the actual Rodef. I can't go, like, you don't get to say on any other circumstance that I can engage in Ritzicha to save a more valuable life. Right? The logical inference that that this is murder comes from the Lashon of Rodef. And so you have to attach, in order to build the case forward, you have to identify what the Rodef is, and the Ritzicha is allowed because that's the Rodef. So whoever else you're saving, if it's not the one that the Rodef is going after, then the whole position falls apart, and you end up not in this Lashon out of the Rambam. So now you have to learn the Isser in a different way. And once you learn the Isser in a different way, the strictures that Aram puts around that don't make a lot of sense, and his language of the words quasi-murder or close to murder or akin to murder, like all of that stuff that he says about it doesn't make sense if he's going to allow what he allows, because it doesn't fall into the logical construct that led there.
So I don't want to read
a little off topic on that. If we can, do they follow the same lines on organ donation, whether it would or wouldn't be allowed?
When you say organ, you mean like kidney donation? Something that's not killing, meaning not other questions of post, after somebody dies, harvesting organs. You want to talk about, can I donate a kidney?
Living, I don't think living donations are their problem too. I thought that was only post-mortem that it's an issue.
Post-mortem is more is complicated for a whole bunch of other reasons, right. Not necessarily directly related to this.
I don't think anyone can actively, if they agree that someone's currently alive, there isn't a position that says you can actively kill a living being in order to...
No, postmortem.
Yeah.
So postmortem, we have a whole bunch of other
living
questions.
Living donations
have other problems, but it's not directly related to us.
Yeah.
So let's...
Okay. Yeah, but here are use cases, something that they say is alive and you're killing, and one says you can't do it unless it's the rodent. That makes sense, logically. This one says, even if it's not the rodent, you can kill it to save somebody else, and that doesn't make any sense, logically.
I have a problem just with reading too closely into Ravon Lichtenstein's argument, because it's a testimony to the Knesset, not like a halachic article. At least this one of what I'm referencing.
Oh, yeah, he
has other pieces, I know, but this one...
He's also written on the topic, and his whole position ends up being like this. It does strike out a moderate position, but it falls in between logical constructs.
Yeah. So Tzitz Eliezer's version of this is very mako. Tzitz Eliezer basically allows you to abort for any situation where you're pretty much harming the mother, where it could potentially be the mother will be suffering. To the extent that, even if potentially the mother would argue that having another kid right now was just not in her grand plan of scheme, and, you know, it's really getting in the way of certain things, maybe she's in school, there's at least a chance Ravonda will be mater in that situation. So he's very, very makel in this question, or at least machmer, depending on whose perspective you're taking. The other version, the middle of the ground version, is really the Shlomo Zalman position, and a lot of other, probably most people, when you walk around the YU Beis Medrash, most people would maintain like this, and that is, we're not going to just let you do an abortion under any circumstances. There is some sort of serious issue here. Maybe it's even quasi, you know, something like Ritzicha, maybe somewhere in that direction. Not quite there, not as far as the Mishnah goes, but that would be enough to say that I can't let you do an abortion under any circumstances, but, like, for example, the person who just not in the mood of having a kid now, but if there is a good enough excuse, then I might be able to be makel in this situation. Rosh Shlomo Zalman's, I think, is classic, at least according to the way Rav Steinberg said it over to me, would be, you know, if the mother is really, it would be very difficult for them to have a kid right now, they're, you know, they're just not ready, or they just can't, or whatever it is, that might be a good enough excuse for them to be able to justify an abortion. Unfortunately, that, though, results in I don't have a some sort of algorithm I can use in order to pass in the Shaila. It's more of, you have to know the person that's asking you the question. It's probably good in Halacha in general. But you have to know the person who's asking you the question. You have to understand the circumstances. And only then can you really begin to answer this question. It's not just something you can, you know, answer off the top of your head. Whereas from the other two positions, it's much easier to do that. So that's that ends up being the different formulas that people use when they're thinking about abortion in general. And then there's this whole thing of whether or not you can be more makel before this 40 days versus after this 40 days. Again, it depends on whether or not you're willing to buy the fact that there is this time frame called Maya Ba'alma, and if that's really serious or not. If you're using, you know, as we pointed out, Koyta Moshe, even though he doesn't like Maya Ba'alma, but at least it makes sense that there is a stage, maybe it's probably earlier than before 40 days, it's not clear what that stage would be, where he's not really considered this thing an abortion, it's just a getting rid of a Shechat Tzera or something like that, where you can be more makel, and as we pointed out, it wouldn't really be a Shechat Tzera because the Tzera went where it was supposed to go. Who cares what happened afterwards? Or to phrase it a different way is, all I did was, for example, by morning after pills, I prevented the blastocyte from being able to receive nutrients. I didn't kill it. Happened to me, it died because it didn't get nutrients, but there's no, since when is there an issue that I have to feed a blastocyte? I could just prevent it from getting its the food that it needs. And so, why would that be an issue?
That would put all the Chabalah camps also.
Yeah, so I didn't say that, but you're right. Chabalah would only be an issue once it attaches, right? Before it attaches, what's a Chabalah problem?
Right. Or
just floating around.
But also, yeah. even immediately post-implantation, I don't think you'd be able to identify if there's like an 8-cell or a 16-cell or 32-cell organism attached to the wall of your uterus, it's hard to argue that you're engaging Chabalah by removing. Like, scraping off skin cells. I mean, not philosophically, they're different, but in terms of the level of wounding you're engaging in, people, like, engage...
I don't think they'd even be able to do a scrape type thing with when it's that small. It
would
have to be
like
chemical.
Like regular dermal abrasion stuff. It takes off way more cells than an immediate post-implantation.
I mean, there's a general question about Chabal in general. It seems to be, it's unclear what the Isra, when did you transgress this Isra of Chabalah? It seems to be when you read Poskim, you read Chuvas, and you read people say it's when something, you cause blood. You cause it to be blood. You cause
no
bleeding.
No blood, no foul.
Unclear where it comes from, though, but that's what everybody uses. That could potentially also be the justification for why you're allowed to get your ears pierced. Right? You don't necessarily bleed when you get your ears pierced.
That's a questionable standard. If someone gets hit really, really hard in the head, it's not chabal.
I mean, maybe it's internal. You'll get internal bleeding. You'll get something.
Okay.
Anyway, that is a brief overview of abortion and a brief synopsis of different things that we've sort of been dancing around for the last few weeks. Yes.
So, in this country...
Oh, it's much more complicated.
So, at 16 weeks, an amniocentesis can be done to see if the baby is Down syndrome. And then the doctor says, well, what will you do if we find the baby has Down syndrome? And then it's left up to the mother. But 16 weeks, that's...
I mean, so 16 weeks would be, again, according to, if you're using the Maiva Alma argument, right, then you get, what is it? We got 40 days is how many weeks?
Oh,
40 days is 5.5 weeks.
5.5 weeks plus 2, so, right, that gets you to probably about 7.5, 8 weeks.
So you're well past that pre-amniocentesis.
Yeah, so for that would be a problem. But, again, there's tests you could do before amniocentesis, right? So for those tests, you would still be able to potentially see something, and then you could potentially make the argument, maybe we're still in Maiva Alma category, and maybe we can be more Mako.
But if you waited for some of the later scans that take place well after the Maiva Alma period, then you're only really looking within the world of the Chabala people or the Hashchatat Zera people, whether the level of difficulty, hardship, etc., would qualify for the termination.
But I think even within Ritzicha, not Rav Moshe, but like Rav Aaron Lichtenstein's middle of Ritzicha and Chabal, whatever that position.
I don't know how to apply his standard. It doesn't make any sense.
So, but like somewhere in that, maybe you'd have, if it's a severe congenital abnormality, then maybe you have some sort of argument you can use.
So I do know right now of a case where the mother is 6 months along and the baby weighs a little more than a pound and it's not. It's got every problem, and the mother already has 6 kids. So the Rebbeim have told her that she's on bed rest, but they've told her that she can abort.
Most people would say that.
Yeah, because there's a lot of problems.
Yeah, I mean, that's a classic case where almost everybody except for a hardline or Moshe position would say it's okay.
Yeah. When you speak about Moshe...
Feinstein.
Okay.
No. Moshe Feinstein.
I'm reading that book, My Yeshiva Years, My Yeshiva University Years.